Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is the Brian Lehrer Show podcast. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but everything we do is available on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
I think that it is necessary for the president and the vice president to tell the American people exactly what happened.
Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter on Fox News Sunday yesterday, calling on President Bush and Vice President Cheney to come clean about why the president himself authorized the leaking of classified information about Saddam Hussein and African uranium to discredit Joseph Wilson back in July of 2003. The White House position: the president has the inherent authority to declassify information, so if he leaks it, it's not a leak, it's a declassification. And besides, said White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan on Friday, there are bad leaks and there are good leaks. Ignore the ABC theme music under this clip.
The president believes the leaking of classified information is a very serious matter, and I think that's why it's important to draw a distinction here. The declassifying information and providing it to the public when it is in the public interest is one thing. But leaking classified information that could compromise our national security is something that is very serious, and there's a distinction.
Scott McClellan. Then there's the distinction between declassifying something to inform the public and declassifying part of something for political purposes, which led to this exchange in a House committee hearing between New York Congressman Gerald Nadler and Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Nadler first.
Does the president have to make a finding that declassifying something is does not injure the national security, or can he do it for political reasons?
The president has the constitutional authority to make the decision as to what is in the national interest of the country.
For whatever reason he feels like.
He has the authority under the Constitution to make that determination.
Okay.
And with all of that, we begin the week as we usually do, talking Monday morning politics today with Ryan Lizza, contributing editor at New York Magazine and senior editor at The New Republic. He is in Washington. Hi, Ryan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
First of all, on this story, the White House has not denied the basic contention that Scooter Libby made as part of his obstruction of justice trial defense that was released last week. And I know this can get kind of technical about where it came from, but I think most people get the idea. This is part of the whole Valerie Wilson leak case and the perjury and obstruction of justice charges that came out of that against Scooter Libby, the chief of staff for Vice President Cheney. So he said in a deposition, I guess, that the president himself authorized Dick Cheney, who authorized Libby, to leak intelligence information to Judith Miller of the New York Times before they officially declassified it in any other way. So is the timeline important here?
The timeline is very important. And one thing I want to add, I was thinking this is a very confusing way to start Monday morning, but let's see if we can make it clear. Over the weekend, there was some news on this. We basically have a chain from the president to the vice president to Libby to Judith Miller of the New York Times, a chain of information, right? And what's important is what information Libby gave her. Because over the weekend, some reporters went back and looked at this, and it turns out that what Libby told her is just wrong. He told her that one of the key judgments in the CIA's major estimate about Iraq's strength was that it was vigorously trying to attain uranium. Well, that's just not true. So added to the fact that it's a leak is that it was a leak of false information. So once that came out, you saw over the weekend that the White House has now distanced Bush from this information. They are now saying that the president did not know what Libby was going to tell Libby. He, in fact, did not even necessarily know that Libby was going to leak this information. All he did was tell Cheney, get some information out that rebuts Joe Wilson. So the White House has now separating Bush from both Cheney and from Libby, putting Libby and Cheney in a very strange situation here. So anyway, I just wanted to start with that because that's the sort of big news that came out over the weekend.
Right. I was going to bring that up, too, that this was from the front page of yesterday's New York Times. I think that's what you're referring to.
Well, it's two things. One is that the information was false, right? The information that Libby gave Judith Miller was actually incorrect. And the second thing is that then the White House then leaked to the AP on Saturday night that the president himself did not know and did not instruct Libby himself to give this information. He just told Cheney, do what you got to do, declassify what you got to declassify to rebut Joe Wilson's op-ed.
Interesting. So in that light, let me replay the cut of White House spokesman Scott McClellan from Friday and tell me if there's any inconsistency here.
The president believes the leaking of classified information is a very serious matter, and I think that's why it's important to draw a distinction here. Declassifying information and providing it to the public when it is in the public interest is one thing, but leaking classified information that could compromise our national security is something that is very serious, and there's a distinction.
The distinction he's trying to make is between the bad leaks,
right,
like what the White House considers the leaks around the warrantless wiretapping program to be, and good leaks, where he's not at all denying and doesn't seem to be saying that the president didn't know specifically what he was doing,
right,
but the leaking of this kind of thing, which he says is in the national interest.
Right, and that Scott McClellan clip was from Friday, I believe, before the White House decided that their new plan was to separate Bush from the Libby leak altogether. And I think what forced them to do that was the reporting in the Times and elsewhere on Saturday that looked at the information that Libby gave Miller and concluded, well, you know, whether Bush can declassify this or not, the information was just incorrect. Libby told her that the national intelligence estimate said that Iraq was, quote-unquote, vigorously trying to procure uranium. And we all know that that's just not true. So this makes the sort of distinction between the two leaks kind of moot, right? Because the leak itself was inaccurate information.
We can take phone calls on this whole presidential leak story at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Ryan Lizza, who writes about Washington politics both for New York Magazine and the New Republic. Ryan, is any of this against the law?
Well, as far as I can tell, and I've talked to lawyers here in Washington, I don't think so. Everyone seems to agree that the President of the United States does have the ability to declassify information.
Just as Attorney General Gonzalez was saying to Congressman Nadler in that clip, he used the words inherent authority.
Right. Now, I think it's up to everyone to decide whether it was an abuse of that authority to selectively declassify information, and even worse than that, to send someone out to the press off the record and say something that wasn't true about one of the gravest things, which is, you know, Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. I think you could certainly argue that it's an abuse of his authority, but technically and legally, does he have the authority to declassify? I think everyone agrees that he does.
And there's also a question here about how the president chooses to declassify, and if it's not something that's against the law, at least it raises questions about what is seemly, because within 2 weeks after the leak to Judith Miller, the same information was declassified in the old-fashioned way,
right,
and the information was released to the public publicly and in fuller context, not just to Judith Miller privately for political reasons and with just a snippet extracted that they wanted to get out. Is there?
Yep.
But I guess you're saying there's no legal issue even there. So if we accept that the president can declassify information, he can even do it that way, that is, authorizing an anonymous leak to a journalist.
Right. And I think, you know, and the White House is making this argument, and it may be true, that he did not necessarily know that Cheney and Libby were going to go off on their own and tell Judith Miller this. You know, Cheney and Libby were obsessed with Joseph Wilson. We know that from all of the reporting that has come out. And they were obsessed with the tantalizing Niger-Iraq connection. They were trying desperately to prove that Iraq was trying to get uranium and trying to rebuild its nukes program. So it wouldn't shock me if Cheney went to Bush and said, hey, we need to push back on Wilson. Bush said, yeah, do what you got to do. And then Cheney and Libby got together and hatched this ridiculous scheme to leak information to Judith Miller and also, by the way, to Bob Woodward at the Washington Post. There's a little speculation thrown into that scenario, but from what we know about the way that the Vice President's office has worked as its sort of own power center in the White House, it wouldn't shock me that this was a sort of lone operation by Cheney and Libby.
And by the way, for all the discussion about Judith Miller, how she was a recipient of the leak regarding Valerie Plame, and she was a recipient of this leak.
Right.
Judith Miller, as far as I understand it, never published a story about either.
That's right. And remember, it gets a little confusing because the leak that we're talking about here was mostly about what was in the National Intelligence Estimate, not specifically the Plame's status as a CIA agent. And you're absolutely right. She was given this information by Libby, but she didn't write a story about it.
Let's take a phone call. Aaron in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Aaron.
Hi. Thank you for putting me on the air. I was wondering how this is reconciled with right after the story broke in 2003, I think it was, when the president said that anyone in his administration would be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law if they were found to be involved with this leak.
Well, that was with the leak that would out the identity of a CIA agent.
Wife, right.
Right.
Yeah.
So if he's suddenly allowed to do this, how is what he said in 2003, how does that connect with what's
happening? Well, that's how, because this is not the leak of her identity. This is the release of classified intelligence information that within 2 weeks they then released publicly anyway. That's what the White House would say.
That's what they would say, yeah. And that legally, and if you go back and look at Bush's specific statement, you can get awfully, and I would not be surprised if the White House starts making this argument. The first half of his statement is about illegal leaks. The second one is just about leaks in general. In the first half of the statement, he says that person will be removed from the White House. In the second half of the statement, when he's just talking about leaks in general, he says that person will just be taken care of. So you might have this technical distinction the White House could make about illegal leaks versus just regular old leaks.
Does taken care of mean a nice pension?
Exactly.
With health benefits?
A promotion. And
Jacob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yes, hi. I actually had a similar question, but it was sort of answered. But it's the discrepancy between the White House's statements about how anybody who is involved in this would no longer be a part of the administration, or just the insistence that Bush had nothing to do with it. And I know they could make this fine distinction between the identity versus other information, but
right. It
does seem to me this shows some involvement.
Well, it shows an involvement. I mean, in fairness to the president, it shows an involvement in trying to rebut the impression that Joseph Wilson's op-ed piece in the New York Times left with the public, which is that the president lied in the State of the Union address about what intelligence agencies were reporting to him about Iraq and uranium from Niger.
Yes, exactly.
It just doesn't say that he was getting to that issue by discredit or by outing Valerie Wilson.
Right,
and it shows that he was involved in the larger sort of Nixonian dirty trick, I think.
Yeah. I keep coming back to this because I think there is some argument to be made that it's okay for the White House to try and rebut a critic. I mean, there are certain boundaries you don't cross, right?
Like outing
her name.
Yeah. And so that's the question that's raised here. Is this another boundary that you don't cross? Leaking classified information to a journalist while claiming that you're trying to crack down on leaks.
Exactly. And I think the fact that the information itself was not true, it just makes it utterly clear that it was a boundary that, another boundary that they did cross.
And just on it being not true, the New York Times front page yesterday said a review of the records and interviews conducted during and after the crucial period in June and July of 2003 also show that what the aide, Libby, said he was authorized to portray as a key judgment by intelligence officers had in fact been given much less prominence in the most important assessment of Iraq's weapons capability. In other words, at very least, they were cherry-picking and blowing up the significance of the information as they understood it. We'll continue in a minute with Ryan Lizza from the New Republic and New York Magazine on this and some other Monday morning politics issues. Brian Lehrer and WNYC.
I do say that there's been enough of a showing here with what's been filed of record in court that the President of the United States owes a specific explanation to the American people.
More of Republican Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter on Fox News Sunday telling us all that the President of the United States owes more of an explanation to the American people as we talk about this president authorizing a leak of classified information story and more Monday Morning Politics with Ryan Lizza, contributing editor on Washington Politics at New York Magazine and senior editor at The New Republic. And Ryan, these clips of Arlen Specter that we've been playing, does that mean that as of yesterday morning, he did not accept the explanations that the White House was putting out about all of this? And what more does he want the president to say specifically?
Well, I think Specter is just looking at reading the paper and realizing that the president himself hasn't said anything. I mean, he's left it to Scott McClellan to give these sort of technical distinctions between good and bad leaks. And then any other questions that the White House press corps asks, the White House just says, well, it's an ongoing investigation and we can't comment on it. Bush himself hasn't taken any questions on the matter since the news broke. So I think, you know, he's good for him. I mean, he's being intellectually honest and he's saying, hey, this needs to be clarified. The public has a right to know what went on here, especially given the president's previous statements about the matter.
Taking more of the president's side, Chris in Wakefield in Rhode Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
There's been when Wilson went over there, first off, they lied about how he got over there. His wife recommended him, and they said, oh, Dick Cheney's office put me over there, and that's incorrect. And this thing about outing her, even Andrea Mitchell came out and said, listen, everybody down in Washington, D.C. knew who she was. When he appeared on the cover of they did this article in New Yorker magazine, and even Wolf Blitzer said to him, well, you were on the cover of this thing. How come you're supposed to be an undercover? So we kind of chuckled, and he says, well, I was trying to upset the apple cart. So this outing her, she was never outed. She was never an agent. She was never an operative, because she wasn't over there for the past 5 years. And it was proven that Joe Wilson, when he came back, he never wrote a report up about what he did. He hung around the pool over there and did some talking schmoozing.
You had points that are at least debatably accurate up until the hung around the pool.
Well, that's what I heard, that he didn't do much investigating. He schmoozed with some people because he was the former ambassador around over there.
So, Chris, let's assume for a minute that everything you just said is true. Does it also bother you that the White House would authorize the leaking of classified information to a journalist in this way?
Well, yeah, because what are you going to do about a liar? He was trying to combat this guy lying. I mean, both of them gave to the Gore campaign. This is a political activist here that was trying to undermine the president. There have been recent tapes by Saddam Hussein that have been declassified and transcribed.
Does it matter if the Times report yesterday is accurate that the information that the president authorized to be leaked, or the information that Cheney and Libby chose to leak, was at odds with the way the actual national intelligence assessment that they were quoting from described it, that they were inaccurate in their portrayal of this information? Does that bother you as much as Joe Wilson, if it's true? It's a tough one.
I mean, everybody's got to be truthful here. I mean, if they're not, I guess it would, but
right. But not to take. I understand your point, but not to take Joe Wilson as gospel. Chris, I'm going to leave it there. Ryan, Lizza, I don't want to revisit this too much, but there have been reported holes in Joseph Wilson's story. And again, I actually think that's kind of beside the point of what we're talking about now.
Right.
But, But there have been holes in Joseph Wilson's story, haven't there?
Look, there have been holes. Joseph Wilson doesn't come off as a 100% hero in this whole thing. I mean, I think personally it's beside the point. I think a couple of things your caller said are inaccurate about whether Joseph Wilson ever said that Cheney sent him. It was the inquiry from Cheney's office to the CIA that launched the whole thing, and that's what Wilson said, and that is accurate. He also said that Valerie Wilson was not an agent, and he said two things. One, that everyone knew she was who she was, and that's not my experience. My experience was that she was undercover, and she most certainly was a covert agent, as Fitzgerald, the prosecutor, has made clear in his filings. But point taken. Joseph Wilson has done, politically some very stupid things, but it's absolutely, you're absolutely right. It's beside the point as far as what the original investigation was about, and that is, did the White House disclose the identity of this covert agent?
Do you expect this issue to have legs politically? When Arlen Specter, Republican chair of the Judiciary Committee, says the president and vice president owe an explanation to the American people, I assume Democrats are jumping on this. What happens next?
It's going to be explosive. You're absolutely right. And Specter's comment, coming from a Republican, that will give it legs. The polls show people are paying attention to this. Bush's approval ratings are in the 30s. And I think the fact that the White House this weekend went to the AP with one of the president's lawyers and specifically distanced the president of the United States from his vice president, it shows how worried they are. They're trying to sort of seal him off from the leak. They're trying to separate him from what happened. And I guarantee you that the story's not going away.
Ryan Lizza, contributing editor on Washington Politics for New York Magazine, senior editor at The New Republic on WNYC. Julie and Nanuet, you're on WNYC. Hi, Julie.
Hi. It's Judy, actually.
Judy, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm wondering, with the president trying to distance himself, if you might comment on the role of the vice president and what implications it would have for him, since it seems that most of our discussion about him has really only been about hunting accidents.
I'm tempted to make a bad hunting pun, but I won't. I think you could make a pretty good argument that most of the things that have gone wrong in this administration lead back to Vice President Dick Cheney's office. From the original beating the drums for the war in Iraq to this entire Joe Wilson matter, to the sort of expansive view of the president's authority and powers, it all goes back to Cheney. It's one embarrassment after another, and in some ways that argument gets the president off the hook when you can blame a sort of lightning rod like Cheney. It sort of spares the president from some of the blame. But I think the argument does hold up, and I think you're going to see a lot of the reporting and a lot of the criticism this week centered on Cheney's office, with people trying to figure out what Cheney did and did he do this with did he authorize Libby to do this with or without the president's knowledge?
And in fact, take me back to that AP story that you referred to before, because if the White House is now trying to push responsibility for this down the chain,
yes,
and saying all that the president did was say to Cheney, okay, do what has to be done to rebut Joseph Wilson, then that means it's either on Cheney or on Libby.
On Libby, right. I mean,
to have decided to declassify or to leak this particular kind of information apparently or reportedly in an inaccurate way.
Right, and you could already see the outlines of the White House spokesman's response today. I mean, what they're likely to say is that the president just said, the vice president came to the president. We need to rebut this criticism from Joe Wilson, and to do it, we need to declassify some information from the National Intelligence Estimate. The president said, "Sure, go ahead, do it." And from there on, he wasn't, they're sort of already arguing from there on he wasn't in the loop. He didn't specifically say that, that Libby needs to go needs to go meet with Judy Miller at the St. Regis over breakfast and give her this information. The president didn't tell Libby to give her inaccurate information. They'll just kick it, like you said, kick it on down the chain. And they'll also argue that at the same time the president authorized the sort of more formal National Intelligence Estimate declassification, the one that was being done by the National Security Council in a more sort of bureaucratic manner. And they might tie the two together and say, well, this, you know, we were just trying to get this information out. You know, Stephen Hadley at the NSC was doing that, but Cheney took it upon himself to give this information to the reporter, but the president didn't know anything about that. And this is a tried and true method. Every time the White House gets in trouble, the first thing the White House does is protect the president or insulate the president from whatever the trouble was. If you remember back in the Enron scandal, they tried to isolate the president from ever knowing or meeting Ken Lay. So there's always a sort of like the guards sort of surround the president and make
right.
sure he's not connected too closely.
Right. But from what you've been describing in the last minute, he'd almost have to argue that he never met Dick Cheney. You know, because you can't really protect the president politically by blaming the vice president unless the vice president resigns or somehow gets his knuckles wrapped publicly by the president.
That's a good question. And to me, that's what happened this weekend, is that the president very clearly is wrapping the knuckles of the vice president. He's saying, yeah, I told him to do this, but I didn't tell him the details.
Or Libby himself, who's the one standing trial, and that they're going to try to cut him loose and make him the fall guy.
Right. And Cheney's, and well, maybe now Cheney will say that. Yeah, I didn't tell Libby to do that. I told him to, you know, go rebut the allegations. He has permission to declassify stuff, but I didn't tell him what, you know, exactly how to do it.
Right. So that's a very important question, if anybody ever gets to ask it, of Dick Cheney.
Absolutely. And the other thing I predict you're going to start to see, and we've already seen it from conservatives, is more calls for the president to get rid of Dick Cheney, right? And you're going to see, you know, he should get rid of Dick Cheney and install Condi Rice or John McCain as vice president, which, if you think about it, would maybe the only way, maybe one of the best ways for this president to save the last few years of his presidency.
I want to get to two other issues. One is the collapse of the immigration bill compromise. Here is President Bush from his Saturday radio address blaming Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid.
I call on the Senate Minority Leader to end his blocking tactics and allow the Senate to do its work and pass a fair, effective immigration reform bill. Immigration is an emotional issue and a vitally important one. At its core, immigration is the sign of a confident and successful nation.
And here is a slightly more technical explanation from Senator Arlen Specter speaking to Britt Hume on Fox News Sunday. Specter, of course, was part of that deal that then fell apart.
Specifically, Brett, the Democrats refused to allow Republicans to offer amendments. I think it was pretty well determined that the votes were there to pass the compromise. But in the Senate, because of our highly technical and arcane rules, the Democrats were in a position to stop us from offering any amendments.
So, Ryan, trying to unpack that, the Democrats say Majority Leader Bill Frist killed the compromise by allowing these poison pill amendments to be added on that they couldn't vote for. Republicans say Democrats killed the compromise by refusing to let those amendments even come to a vote, because they say Democrats would rather have an election campaign issue than a bill. So with as much of a nonpartisan eye as you can muster, who did what and why?
This is a confusing one, and I think there's a germ of truth on both sides. I think for the Democrats, their argument is they had a compromise, and that compromise rested on there not being any final amendments on the floor. Now, it's also, as Specter said elsewhere, probably in the Democrats' political interest for this bill not to pass. So given the opportunity to kill it on a technicality, but one that's, you know, has an intellectually honest basis, I think they decided to take it. And, you know, you saw
Could the Democrats have just defeated those amendments, which they saw as too tough on immigrants?
I don't know if they had votes to do that or not, and I don't know if either side did. But I imagine, you know, generally, when amendments get to the floor, by that point, I think it was just three amendments. I imagine whoever was supporting them knew that they were going to pass, but I don't know. And you know, the politics on this. If you want to try and figure out the politics in the Democratic caucus, you have to look at Reid and Kennedy. He was integral to putting the compromise together, and there was a little bit of split between Minority Leader Reid and Ted Kennedy. Kennedy was a little bit upset that the agreement was scuttled. Reid was okay with it. Now Reid is thinking about winning Senate seats in the fall, and I think Kennedy was a little bit more committed to this compromise.
So Reid thinks that it's not in the Democrats' interest to be seen as too pro-immigrant right at this moment?
I think it's more this. It's more he thinks it's not in the Democrats' interest for the Republican-led Senate to have a major legislative success.
Hmm. All right. One more issue. The Seymour Hersh article in the New Yorker today that says the U.S. is preparing military plans to strike Iran if Iran continues working on a nuclear program. Now, all Hersh has is one anonymous source, we should say.
Yeah.
So should the media be getting all excited about this as it is?
Look, I think so. I mean, if there's any lesson we learned in the run-up to the Iraq war, it's that we should take these things very, very seriously. And, you know, I think Hersh's reporting, for the most part, has stood up well. And look, it's not. Everyone knows that that a military option to Iran's nuclear program is on the table.
A possibility. So they all say they won't take it off the table. Actually,
right.
The Washington Post had a version of this too yesterday, didn't they?
They did. The White House is saying they're being very cagey. Or the administration is being very cagey about Hersh's piece. They're saying parts of it are inaccurate. They're not really explaining which ones.
That's what they always say about Hersh's pieces. But I don't know. Did I underplay this a minute ago by calling it one anonymous source in a Seymour Hersh article? Because if the Washington Post also did it, maybe there's something more there.
Yeah, that's right. It was on the front page of the Post yesterday. And look, it could be a dispute within the administration, right? Just like we had in the run-up to the war with Iraq. Even before, I think, the policy was set, you had a lot of hawks leaking to the press saying, this is a done deal, we're going to war, even while battles still raged in the administration. And you know, it could be that. It could be people that want the policy to go one way or another leaking to the press.
Leaking out to the press.
In this case, it could be the doves, not the hawks.
Now, let me play one more clip, because if it ever does come to U.S. military action, they may not have Tony Blair or
right.
his successor along for the ride this time. Here's what British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw had to say to the BBC yesterday about the whole idea of bombing Iran. Pretty blunt.
They also suggest that there's going to be a nuclear strike on Iran, and they have the name Mr. Richard Pearl, which should carry a health warning for any reporter associated with such reports.
I mean, the so-called Prince of Darkness.
Yes, and rather unreliable reporter on what happens in the administration. The idea of a nuclear strike on Iran is completely nuts.
So in context there, completely nuts. Straw referring to the part of the Seymour Hersh article that the U.S. might even use the so-called bunker buster nuclear weapons to go after some underground nuclear facility.
Yeah, and look, I've talked to Israeli officials who obviously monitor this very closely. I've talked to administration officials. As far as I can tell, it's anyone's guess as to whether you could actually destroy Iran's nuclear program with airstrikes, nuclear bunker busters or not. So when you have an anonymously sourced piece like this, it's just very hard to figure out what the agenda is here. And, you know, maybe is the administration trying to send a signal, to Iran? Is it trying to scare them? I don't know, but back to your original question, you know, definitely we should take it seriously.
But the Jack Straw quote, besides kind of poo-pooing the nuclear part of
it, they're not going to be on board.
Yeah. It seems to indicate that a coalition of the willing will be even harder to put together than with Iraq.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It'll be the U.S. alone.
And coming up later in the program, we will do a call-in about the Iran situation, particularly for Iranian Americans, to see if you might have some between the two worlds insights for the rest of us. So that'll be coming up later on. But that's our Monday Morning Politics Chat for today with Ryan Lizza, contributing editor at New York Magazine and senior editor at The New Republic in Washington. Ryan, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up next, the Speaker of the New York City Council, the new Speaker, just completing her first 100 days, Christine Quinn. All the tabloids are saying she's in a honeymoon with Mayor Bloomberg. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.